Welcome back to Central Standard Friday. I'm Monroe Dodd. In the first part of the hour, we heard about how the Sheffield Cemetery here in Kansas City is making a comeback. Now let's go across to the other side of the state, along the Mississippi River, where they celebrate the town's and perhaps Missouri's most famous product, Samuel Clemens. We also know him as the author, Mark Twain. Joining us by telephone from Hannibal will be Cindy Lavelle, Executive Director of the Mark Twain Boyhood Home and Museum in Hannibal. Cindy, welcome to Central Standard Friday.
Thanks for having me.
You've got the 100th anniversary of the museum itself coming up Tuesday, and so you're no doubt a busy person. Thanks for taking the time to talk.
Oh, I love talking Twain. This is great. Thanks for having me.
Before we get to all the events surrounding the centennial, remind us about a few things in the early life of Samuel Clemens. For starters, he was born not far from Hannibal in a tiny place called Florida, Missouri.
That's right. There's a state shrine there. I encourage visitors to visit there. They have wonderful artifacts from his Hartford home, from his family. It's a treasure trove there, and a beautiful state park, close to everything but far from everything. It's just from Hannibal, it's about a 40-minute ride, a beautiful country ride, and we encourage all of our visitors to make their way to Florida and see where he was born. Also, a preservationist, Karen Hunt, has purchased the old farm of his Uncle John Quarles out there, and she has been lovingly digging. She did an archaeological dig, brought up marbles and dolls' heads, and, you know, staking out the buildings, you know, the family's home, the slave quarters, and she is rebuilding the home of his Uncle John. This is where Sam spent many summers after the family moved to Hannibal when he was four.
Now, Florida, but Florida, where he was born, is right by Mark Twain Lake?
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm. He was born in 1835, and when did the family then move into Hannibal?
They moved in 1839, it was just before his fourth birthday, and then he lived here until he was 17. So those formative years, where we get Tom and Huck, all these great stories came out of his boyhood here in Hannibal.
And many of those years of his boyhood and his teenage years were spent in this very house.
Absolutely. Yeah, the home itself is just a treasure. It's one of the earliest known house preservations in the country. We do a lot better with that now, but we were lucky it was scheduled to be demolished in 1911, and a local resident, George Mahan, stepped up and bought it and donated it to the city, and it's been operating as a museum since May 15th, 1912.
Now, perhaps the two most famous books in American literature, they certainly rank up high with anything else, are Tom Sawyer and Adventures of Huckleberry Finn. Tom Sawyer came out in the year of the U.S. Centennial, 1876, and Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, I believe, 9 years later. And Twain drew many inspirations from the town of Hannibal, from his neighborhood, from the river. That's correct, isn't it?
Absolutely. I just did a 90-minute Skype interview with middle school students in Richmond, Virginia, who are reading Tom Sawyer. And we use Skype, and I'm able to show them the actual sites. And I tell them, you know, Tom Sawyer, probably 90% of that book is autobiographical. And I'm always giggling when I find it in the fiction section because he did change the names, at least, in that. But it's all based in his boyhood here. And, of course, the events of Huckleberry Finn, much more mature and insightful. You know, his great treatise against racism and slavery, it's breathtaking. I mean, I'll sit down on a Sunday and just read it cover to cover. I still find so much inspiration in that book, but it all began right here in Hannibal.
And I believe you called yourself and other people who really, really, really like Mark Twain and his life Twainiacs.
We're Twainiacs. We know who we are. Yes.
That's close to or over on into obsession.
Well, people used to tell me I was obsessed with him. I said, can we just say passionate, because that sounds a little healthier. So I'm passionate about Mark Twain. But he changed my life, and he's changed many people's lives. This is why we see visitors here every year from around the world. No fewer than 60 countries are represented each year. And these people save up and plan this vacation, plan this Mecca, if you will, to Hannibal. They want to stand on the levee. They want to look across at Illinois, which was a free state, and stand here in Missouri, which was a slaveholding state, and ponder this boy and this town and the comprehensiveness of these issues and how deeply rooted they were in our culture. And imagine, how could this have been? How could this have happened? So I've seen grown men stand out here on the street and burst into tears. They're so overcome.
Cindy, how did your own passion for Mark Twain begin?
Oh, I blame it on my fourth grade teacher, Mr. Reese. I grew up on a farm in Pennsylvania, didn't know about the Mississippi River or anything, but every day he would read us a chapter from a book, a great book. He never read us a whole book. He just whet our appetites for many, many books, and then we would clamor to get our hands on the books, and he read the whitewashing chapter, and as the oldest girl on a farm, I had a lot of chores, and I have to tell you, I probably shouldn't be proud of this, but I was fascinated by how Tom got everybody to do his work for him, and I thought I could maybe learn a little bit on getting my little sisters to help me a little bit more, and I got a hold of that book and couldn't stop reading it. It was when I really discovered the joy of rereading a book, and I love to remind people that it's not really just a kid's book. I mean, there's some beautiful poetry in that book, and let's face it, as adults, it's just fun to get back in touch with our inner childhood a little bit, and Tom Sawyer is a great way to do it. Huckleberry is uplifting and inspirational, Huckleberry Finn, of course, and Tom Sawyer is just a nice break from reality. I enjoy it so much.
Now, Mark Twain left Hannibal, I believe, in the early 1850s to go on to make, he was even then still Samuel Clemens, went on to make his literary career. And he died in 1910. What happened to the house in those intervening years?
Oh, gosh, it was used for so many different things. People, mainly a residence. It was mainly a residence and kind of in a tumble down. He came back to Hannibal a few times and visited. He was last here in 1902, and we have pictures of this on our website showing him standing in front of the boyhood home on that last visit. And we have so many people who come down and stand just in his pose. They'll put their left hand in their pocket and they'll pose just like Sam. But it was basically a residence, and luckily it had been remodeled. Part of it had been torn off on the back. When they excavated in 1990 and 91 to refurbish the home, they discovered the missing rooms and kind of explained Mark Twain's quote about it, because when he came back, he said that he remembered it being a much larger house, and of course childhood does that to us as well. Our memories will play tricks, but it really was a smaller house when he came back in 1902. So it had undergone a few changes, but we now have it fully restored.
And it became a museum only a couple of years after his death.
Right. He died in 1910, and it was 1912 when it opened. And at first, the caretaker lived upstairs, and people would come into the front parlor, which is the setting for the famous Painkiller and Peter and the Painkiller scene, which was a true story. Sam had actually done that, and it evolved. And the WPA project built a stone museum next to it, so they were able to move artifacts over there. And it's just continued to evolve. We are now up to 9 properties that we care for in the museum complex.
Cindy Lavelle, when the museum began in 1912, what group owned it or started it?
It was the City of Hannibal, and to this day, the City of Hannibal owns the 4 oldest properties. They are leased to the Mark Twain Home Foundation, which operates the Mark Twain Boyhood Home and Museum. We're a nonprofit foundation. And so the City of Hannibal still owns the 4 properties. We pay $1 a year to lease them, and of course we take care of them, maintaining them. We receive no tax dollars. We receive nothing. It's all by admission, by gift shop, and by the occasional donation or grant that we are able to secure. But they're still city-owned properties.
So besides the Boyhood Home, there are other properties. Would you describe those, please?
Sure. The Justice of the Peace building, I call it the Justice of the Pisa building because it has a noticeable bent to it. This was his father's courtroom. His dad was the Justice of the Peace and held court. Sam often sat in and eavesdropped and listened to the hearings there. So that's an old Western-style building. We also maintain Grant's Drugstore. This is where the family lived briefly. They had to move briefly out of that little boyhood home when they fell on hard times. Sam's dad had signed co-signed a loan for a friend, ended up defaulting, and the family fell on hard times and lived in Grant's briefly. And this is where his dad died of pneumonia in 1847, which, of course, changed everything for Sam Clemens. He had to leave school and, at that point, ended up supporting himself the rest of his life. So that's a significant home. It's 175 years old and desperately needs refurbishing. It's a lot of fundraising we have to do. We also have the Becky Thatcher House, which the exterior has been refurbished. We're looking to get the interior done this year and reopened soon. We've got, of course, the WPA Stone Building, the Interpretive Center, the Mark Twain Museum Gallery, and we've got the very famous Tom and Huck statue, one of the earliest known statues to fictional characters. So it's pretty significant. It went up in 1926.
Back to
the Huckleberry Finn House. I almost forgot to mention Huck's house.
Back to Becky Thatcher an instant. This was the house of a girl that he actually knew.
Sure, Laura Hawkins. She lived directly across the street from Sam. She lived to be a ripe old age. She lived here in Hannibal and was often interviewed by reporters because she had, of course, this one degree of separation from Sam. So she was popular with reporters and told many stories of growing up next to the Clemens family, told stories about Jane and so forth. But she was real, and she was the inspiration for Becky Thatcher.
Okay, and now you mentioned the Huckleberry Finn house. Who is that inspired by?
Well, Huck is quite the hero, isn't he? Huck was a real boy. His name was Tom Blankenship. And God loved this little family. They lived in a tiny place, just eight children and two parents in this tiny little home that, you know, you wouldn't want to camp in necessarily. It's just tiny. But he was a good boy, and Mark Twain wrote about him in his autobiography. He said he had as good a heart as any boy ever had. And he did have an older brother, Bence, who was known to have helped a runaway slave. Now, this would have been very much frowned upon by the society here. And yet we know that Clemens gathered all these childhood memories and stories, and he gave Bence's good deed to Tom, and he took Tom's personality and created this fellow, Huckleberry Finn. But all real people. Tom Blankenship used to sneak over to the boyhood home. It's just a stone's throw from Sam's, and meow at the window, and Sam would skedaddle out the window, and off he would go for a night of adventure. You know, I don't know if you've heard our CD, Mark Twain Words and Music, but Brad Paisley sings a beautiful song on there that some friends of mine wrote for the project. It's called Huck Finn Blues, and it is literally about Tom Blankenship coming meowing for Sam Clemens, and off they would go to their nighttime adventures.
Well, as long as you mentioned the CD, I know you've been on KCUR earlier talking about it, but just briefly, will you describe that CD?
Oh, thank you for the opportunity. It's a double CD that tells Twain's life in spoken word and song, and everyone stepped forward to help us out as a benefit for the museum. So we've got Clint Eastwood as Mark Twain and Jimmy Buffett as Huckleberry Finn, and Garrison Keillor narrates the project. Their voices are heavenly, and the stories are lovely, but in between are songs that also help tell the story. So you will hear Brad Paisley and Sheryl Crow singing Beautiful Dreamer a cappella, just breathtaking. Vince Gill, Emmylou Harris. So it's a wonderful project we're very proud of. We hear from people all around the world. I just heard from a professor in Japan who's made it a required text, as it were, for a class that he teaches on Mark Twain. I thought that was kind of neat. But we're very proud of it, and it does bring you right back home to Hannibal as you listen to it, because throughout Twain's life, of course, he always looked back on Hannibal. It was a great source for his literature, very fond memories, kept in touch with his friends here by letter, and visited several times as an adult.
You're listening to Central Standard Friday on KCUR. I'm Monroe Dodd, here with Cindy Lavelle of the Mark Twain Boyhood Home in Hannibal, Missouri. We're talking about the Missouri native who began life as Samuel L. Clemens and gained world fame as the author Mark Twain. Clemens' Boyhood Home is celebrating its 100th year as a museum. If you have a question or a comment about Hannibal or about the Boyhood Home or about Mark Twain, join us by calling 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or emailing us at centralstandard@kcur.org. Now, Cindy Lavelle, the actual anniversary date of this Boyhood Home Museum, the 100th anniversary, is Tuesday.
Yes, it is. May 15th, 2012 will be the 100th anniversary. We have a ceremony planned here at noon with many speakers. Congressman Luke Kamar will be here. He recently did a phenomenal piece of legislation, completely bipartisan, led the charge to passed a bill to mint a commemorative Mark Twain coin. And now we're hoping the Senate will take it up and run with it as well. So Congressman Luke Kamar will be here to speak about the importance of historic preservation. We also have Dean Mills from Mizzou School of Journalism, because at the first ceremony in 1912, the dean of the School of Journalism spoke. We'll have Representative Lyndall Shoemake, and Miss Sarah Zimmerman is the great-granddaughter of George Mahan, who donated the Boyhood Home originally. And, of course, we will have Jim Waddell, who's performing as Mark Twain. He's one of our local Twain performers and does a wonderful job. So it'll be a nice ceremony. We've got all 10 Toms and Beckys on hand, and we're opening the home that evening for special behind-the-glass tours. The home for many years has been, you access it by sort of stepping into the room, but it's all preserved through glass. Well, that night we're going to open the glass. We're going to let visitors come in and actually go into the rooms and go through and listen to docents tell some of the stories, some of the real stories from Tom Sawyer and so on, and get to be in the Boyhood Home, which will be a real treat.
You said 10 Toms and Beckys.
Yeah, in Hannibal we have a wonderful program, the Tom and Becky Ambassador Program. Seventh grade boys and girls compete for this. It's a rigorous competition. They have to pass a test where they know everything about Hannibal's history and Mark Twain, and they have to know the book Tom Sawyer inside and out. And they're wonderful children. They put a lot of time and energy in. We end up choosing 5 Toms and 5 Beckys because they're in such demand. They go around the community and do different projects, but they also go out and travel. They go out on the road and have been around the world. I know they've been to Bermuda and Japan and just all over. Wherever somebody needs a Tom and Becky, they call upon our Hannibal children, and off they go. So we'll have all 10 representatives there on Tuesday, which will be quite a sight to see them because they come out in their full dress. They perform the scenes from the book and carry the treasures that Tom described in the book. And they're a wonderful group. I love working with these kids. They're very dedicated and hardworking, and it's fun to just meet them and talk to them.
As I understand it, the Tom and Becky program is not of recent vintage. There are some veteran Toms and Beckys out there.
Oh, there are. It began back in the 50s. Huh. In fact, it began formally in the 50s, but you might even say that it began back in 1902. When Mark Twain made his last visit to Hannibal, the boys and girls of the town heard that he was in town, and they became so excited they ran home and went through their closets and whatnot and put on whatever they could to make themselves look like Tom and Huck and Becky, and they all came out to stand and welcome him as his characters. And so in an informal way, they kind of did that. And in 1935, his daughter Clara and her daughter Nina came out for the centennial of his birthday, and they arrived in Hannibal and brought artifacts for the museum from Sam. And the kids, again, put on their best. When I say their best, I mean their shabbiest, their little Huck Finn ragtag dungarees and their little straw hats and fishing poles, and they turned out to welcome Clara. So there's been some form of a Tom or a Becky here ever since he lived here as a boy, and it began officially in the 1950s and has really grown into a wonderful program. I'm very proud of the kids who step up and put the commitment. They put a full year in. They're on call all the time, and they come out and do a wonderful job.
Let's go now to John in Turner, Kansas. John, good morning and welcome to Central Standard Friday.
Hi, good morning. Yes, I took a one-semester class on Mark Twain at Wyandotte High School. Mm-hmm. Quite interesting, many years ago. Also, did you know he came and went with Halley's Comet? Halley's Comet comes every 75 or 76 years, and he was born 1835 and 1910, right?
Cindy, is that correct?
1835 to 1910, and you're absolutely right about Halley's Comet. In fact, when you listen to our CD, it opens with that story, and Emmylou Harris sings a beautiful song called When Halley Came to Jackson, and the CD closes with the comet taking Twain out, and Ricky Skaggs sings a beautiful song called Comet Ride. So the comet is a great story. Twain predicted he would go out with the comet, and the last night, the night he died, April 21st, 1910, was the last night that you could see the perihelion of the comet with the naked eye. I was recently going through some old Quincy, Illinois newspapers and just looking to see what they wrote about him when he died, about the obituary. And what was fascinating was on the paper for April 22nd, which would have been the next day, they actually had an article describing how the night before was the last night you could see the comet. Kind of gave me the chills to read it in the paper, knowing that he had predicted that.
John, how did you begin get your interest in Mark Twain going?
Oh, it's just ongoing because he's such a central figure, you know, and of course having a class in high school, but, you know, his story never ends. Also, could you explain to the listeners, in case they don't know, what the name Mark Twain means, and I'll go ahead and sign off. Thanks.
Thanks, Tom.
Well, Mark Twain is a wonderful term. I just talked with some middle school students this morning about this. It literally means to mark two. But it's a steamboat term. The steamboats, of course, plying the river out here had to be very careful to be in safe water, to have a good depth, a good safe depth for the boat. And so the leadsman would go out. He had a rope with knots tied on it, marked off at different depths, and a piece of lead at the bottom. He would throw that in, so he could get an accurate measurement, and he would sort of sing up to the pilot house and let them know the depth. Mark Twain would be sung out. Marking Twain would be marking 2 fathoms, which was say 12 water, and that was safe water, 12 feet of water, and a steamboat like that's safe water. So when a riverboatman, a steamboatman, would hear this term Mark Twain, he knew he was in safe water. One of our songs on the CD is called Safe Water because of that. So it literally meant safe, and of course, as Ron Powers likes to point out, it might also mean dangerous water, because if you were in deeper water, now it's getting shallow, you might be heading the other direction. So maybe our guy was playing it both ways there.
Let's go now to Dan in Overland Park. Dan, good morning.
Good morning. I just thought the lady would like to know that my great-grandfather is the one that brought Mark Twain into the world. He's mentioned in a couple of books. His name was Chowning, and I think he was 27 at that time, and Mark Twain was a very sickly kid. So I grew up in Hannibal, too, and was Tom Sawyer in 44 when they had the book on, or had the movie on Mark Twain. And then in 47, I played it again and was in the Becky Thatcher bookstore for a few years. Just kind of a little comment to her.
Oh, that's wonderful. You know, he wrote quite a bit about your great-grandfather of a doctor. Talked about how they paid their bills and things, and how he kind of blamed him in a funny way for keeping him alive, of course, because he was a very sickly boy. And
yep.
He wrote some beautiful things about him in the autobiography. You're absolutely right.
Well, my brother had to stand with his name as his middle name for his name was Chowning, middle name. He didn't like that very well. So thought I'd comment. I'm enjoying hearing about Hannibal again.
Well, thank you very much for sharing that. I'm very honored to even speak with you. That's wonderful. Dr. Thomas Jefferson Chowning was his name.
Yep, that was him.
Yep.
He's buried up in Florida, Missouri. So.
Yeah, well, he's a hero to me.
Oh, well, good. Well, nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you.
Thank you, Dan. For our edification, Cindy, how do you spell that last name?
Chowning, Chowning, Dr. Thomas Jefferson Chowning.
Okay. Now, for those of us over here in western Missouri, what's the best way to get to Hannibal, and how long does it take?
Oh, it's just a stone's throw. You can hop on I-70 and then come up 61, although that might be the long way. That's the direct way. You can also kind of meander over to come over 70 to Columbia, and then from there just come up 54 and 19 to 61, real easy. And some folks like to come in on 3672. That's a nice little run. I like that run myself because I've been over to Kansas City a few times. I like stopping in Marceline, Walt Disney's boyhood hometown, and also I like stopping in Macon. There are some good restaurants there. So lots of good ways to get there from here. It's a pretty drive across our state and very easy to get here, and we're very happy to see you when you come.
And the Mark Twain Boyhood Home and Museum is open year-round, 7 days?
Year-round, 7 days a week, 9 to 5. We only close for 4 major holidays, but we're 9 to 5, 7 days a week.
And it's a complex that's of sites, as we mentioned earlier, really pretty close to looking down on the Mississippi River.
Yeah, we're right on the shore here. I'm in the museum gallery, and I'm looking out at the river right now. We're right alongside the river, and the Boyhood Home. Everything's just all walking distance, and you can hop on the Mark Twain riverboat and have a nice ride, and go by Jackson's Island where Tom and Huck and Joe sneaked off and played. You know, they ran away, and just great adventures. It really, really brings the book to life. We bring young authors here, and they're always amazed. They've read the book, and when they get here, they can't believe that it was all real. And we encourage them, write from real life, write what you know. That's what Sam Clemens did, and it served him well.
In fact, Cindy, we have an emailer, Dale from Overland Park, who said that when he finished Huck Finn and the Adventures of Huckleberry Finn and Tom Sawyer, the books, he went to Hannibal and to the cave, and as a 12-year-old was able to give a tour himself because Twain's descriptions were so accurate.
I believe that. And you know what's funny about the cave? It's one of my favorite places, of course. And they focus on Tom and Becky, the tour guides do. And Linda Colbert is the owner there. She and I are good friends. And we just love our guys and our characters. And one night we were talking, and I was curious. I said, now, I wonder why they never mentioned Huckleberry Finn with his talk about the cave. And she had forgotten about that part. So I got the book and reread it to her, where Huckleberry, in the very beginning of the book, he describes going down there to meet up with Tom Sawyer's gang. They were having a meeting. Tom called a meeting. And Huckleberry, which was Mark Twain, gives this very detailed description of how they climbed up the hill, wiggled down in the hole, which, of course, is the original entrance to the cave, and then off they went, and he paced it out. He told how they got there. And as I read it to Linda, who knows the cave like the back of her hand, she said, you know, I think I can picture where that's going. And I said, well, Sam Clemens was known for his uncanny memory. I said, let's go follow Huck's footsteps here. Let's go follow his directions and see where it takes us. So we got our flashlights and went into the cave and followed Huck's his short little paragraph of directions. And by golly, Sam Clemens literally laid out the path, and we walked right into the room that he described where these fictional boys met and had their meeting, and how the walls were all wet and clammy, and it was exactly as it appeared in Huckleberry Finn. So I agree that Mark Twain could give a description he could remember in such detailed accuracy like no other author.
Mark Twain, born Samuel Clemens in Florida, Missouri, and grew up in Hannibal, Missouri. The Boyhood Home and Museum is celebrating its centennial. Our guest in this half hour has been Cindy Lavelle of the Mark Twain Boyhood Home in Hannibal. Thanks, Cindy, for your time.
Thank you, Monroe.
And that's all the time we have for today's show. Earlier, we spoke to Ricky Hayes of the Friends of Sheffield Cemetery in northeast Kansas City. For more information on our guests and on upcoming shows, visit our website, kcur.org. Our show was produced today by Charlie Upchurch. Our announcer is Kim Noble. I'm Monroe Dodd. Tune into Central Standard Friday next week for the Food Critics. And enjoy your day and enjoy your weekend.